listening to the World Ministry of Imam W. D. Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W. D. Muhammad. The Sensemaker presents Al Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. D. Muhammad. This new book is must reading for everyone, which gives a concise and historical understanding of Al Islam. Imam Muhammad's new book is filled with photos and graphics and words of wisdom that appeals to common sense. Al Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. D. Muhammad. Order your copy by sending a check or money order for $7.95 plus $1.50 shipping and handling to The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. That's The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. For more information and wholesale rates, call 312-243-7600. That's 312-243-7600. Get this dynamic new book from Imam W. D. Muhammad, The Sense Maker. Following is part one of a lecture by Imam W. D. Muhammad, entitled The History of the African-American Experience in Islam, recorded at the University of Arkansas, Little Rock.
Imams, brothers, brother Muslims, honorable gathering all, we appreciate the opportunity to speak to you at this facility on the campus of the University of Arkansas, Little Rock. The topic that was selected was the African American experience, our history in Islam, or the Islamic experience, our history of the African American. Before beginning my address on that particular experience, our history of African Americans and Islam as Muslims, I would like to draw your attention to the circumstances that existed when Islam, or the Muslims, began in the African or black community of cities, big cities like Detroit, Chicago, Milwaukee, and then New York and many other places. We began to realize a growth in numbers. The circumstances of the 30s and 40s are quite different from the circumstances of the 60s. During the 30s, as you know, the early 30s, there was the Depression, the Great Depression, and most of the African Americans, along with non-African Americans of these big cities, were out of jobs. My parents, my father was on welfare, my mother was on welfare, and my father was very, very depressed. And he met a mystic, who might not be a mystic, but we call him a mystic, by the name of Farad. It's spelled in the encyclopedia F-A-R-D, but it's pronounced Farad. He met this mystic, and this mystic was preaching in the black neighborhoods of Detroit. And his message was that blacks, African Americans, came from an Islamic past, and that they had to learn again that Islamic past, and Islam was their religion, their heritage, their religion, and they should be Muslims. This person by the name of Farah is given in the encyclopedias as a silk peddler. He was a poor man, and it is thought that he was an Arab, a poor man and an Arab who was peddling silk. I recall seeing Arabs in the neighborhoods, even as a boy. They would be selling yard goods, and they would carry the goods on their arm, and they would peddle it and sell the yard goods. So I have some awareness of such peddlers. And it is said that when my father, the late leader, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, when he heard this man for the first time preaching this message, He converted. And he returned home. He returned to his home. He had no job. His wife was on welfare. He was drinking liquor very heavily. Many times my mother had to bring him in the house on her shoulder, I'm told. So he was in very, very bad condition, like many of his lot of the African-American people at that time. He returned home and had the strength to tell my mother, in those bad circumstances, to look in the icebox. He said, go in the icebox and throw out all the pork meat. You know, Muslims don't eat pork. He learned at that very first meeting that Muslims didn't eat pork. So he told her, throw out all the pork meat. My mother said to me, she said, son, when he told me that, that was very hard for me. Said, not that I wanted to eat it. She said, I had heard the Farad myself, she called him our savior. They referred to him as their savior. She said, I had heard my savior, I wasn't wanting to eat it myself, she said, but I had a poor friend who had a lot of children like I did. She said, and she was a Christian. See, I wanted to give it to her. So it really hurt me to throw it out. She said, I haven't told many about this, she said, but son, I didn't let your father know, but I didn't throw that meat away. She said, I gave it to my friend. She gave it to her Christian girlfriend. So those circumstances back there, I think are very, very important to look at first before I begin the topic for the day. Also, we have to understand that during that time, there were a lot of black nationalist preachers, or a lot of black nationalist spokesmen. Garvey had become very popular at that time. Another one by the name of Drew Ali, and we're going to get to Drew Ali later, just a brief mentioning of him again later, was popular during that time. And also the Caucasian, or the European American community, had speakers or spokesmen who were critical of America's treatment of not only whites, but of other minorities, not only blacks, but of other minorities, and who were advancing some ideas quite different from those that were traditional. I won't go into any detail, but mainly my point is to focus on these very different circumstances for American society at that time. Why was Islam thought to be an attraction? Now this man, that named Farad, who introduced the religion in the African-American community to compete with, and he hoped that would eventually overcome or outdo the church in our life. What made Islam attractive to him? He didn't have to pick Islam. He was a man who believed in any means necessary. Any means necessary. So he didn't have to pick Islam. He picked Islam, I believe, because Islam has a special appeal for African Americans or black Americans. That appeal is understood when we understand the emphasis in this religion, Islam, on knowledge, the great value that is placed on knowledge, and also disciplines, the great value that is placed on disciplines. And lastly, but not least at all, the great regard that is paid to nature itself, nature, that as Dr. Ismail Farouki said on this wonderful video here, we heard Dr. Farouki said, who may God give him paradise, he's a martyr among Muslims, and especially for us in America, may God give him paradise. He was killed because of what he advocated. And he said that we don't go to nature because of any superstition. This is my language, superstition. Because of any superstition, we go to nature because God created nature. Because God created nature. So the heavy emphasis on nature, these three, I believe, account along with material balance, material spiritual balance. Our religion focuses the material life and the spiritual life in a way to reconcile the two, the spiritual life and the material life, in a way to reconcile the two and not to present the two as being in conflict with each other. So this too made for a great attraction in the African-American community, in the African-American, in the ghetto of the African-Americans at that time and even now. I'm going to try to speed this up because I know time is very limited, and we hope to give time a half an hour if necessary, 15 minutes to half an hour for questions. Dr. C. Eric Lincoln, you might know about him. He's at Duke University. He's head of the religious department at Duke University, a very well-known man. He authored the book called Black Muslims and gave us the name. Before Dr. C. Eric Lincoln's book, we were not called Black Muslims. We were called only the Temples of Islam, the Lost Found Nation of Islam in the wilderness of North America, and Muslims, but not Black Muslims. It was Dr. C. Eric Lincoln who wrote the book, Black Muslims, and thereafter we were called Black Muslims. When I say we, I'm referring to the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who passed away in 1975, February of 1975. I'm referring to Dr. Lincoln for one reason today. I have great respect for Dr. Lincoln, but I have one reason for referring to him this morning, and that is to tie in something that I believe is very true. He, first of all, calls in one of his late publications, he identifies Islam in the African-American community under the leadership of Elijah Muhammad as, quote, proto-Islamic black nationalism. Proto-Islamic black nationalism. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, if you look at his language, if you know his language, you study his language, you will see that he himself referred to his religion, or his presentation of religion, or his kind of religion at that time, as not the Islam of the future, but he said the dress of Islam. He established that his main purpose was, in his words, to pull his people out of the fire. And out of the fire meant the fires of sin, the fires of ignorance, etc., etc., etc. And he pointed to a day when Islam would be established after him, but we thought it would come many, many, like generations after him, in its true meaning. African Americans would have to be those who were enslaved if we are going to talk about really African Americans in Islamic history. But if we're talking about African Americans in that kind of experience, then we have to talk about ourselves, definitely so, truly so. But if we are going to be talking about African Americans in real Islamic history, we have to talk about African American slaves. It is documented that a slave by the name of Omar Ibn Said lived in Carolina, and they have a museum there in North Carolina that carries his script from him, and from Quran that he wrote, and while he was in prison, and other evidences that he was a Muslim. And there is the evidence that another slave by the name of Bali, and he also is in history, documented in American history now, that he was seen praying, and there was obvious, a very fact, of the clear fact that he was a Muslim. And one of the members of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's following, his name is Brother Muhammad, he, about 10 years ago or so, he did a research after we began talking about Muslims in Africa, in the history of our enslavement. He did a study and documented that there were eight or nine persons, men, Muslim men, that he found in history, in American history, that were Muslims. We know there were many others. When I was a young boy, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a clipping from a newspaper, a Detroit newspaper, showing the slaves on a slave block. Now, I can't recall just why this article appeared in the paper during the early 30s, but this picture appeared, and it showed among those slaves on the slave block, one man, African-American man, with a Moorish fez on. The Moorish fez is a deep red cap with a black tassel. They showed him being sold on the auction block wearing this Moorish fez, which says that he was a Muslim, and he looked, as we used to say, he looked typical Negro. our colored man. He was definitely a typical Negro, our colored man.
We'll be right back after these brief announcements. Thank you for your financial support of Imam Muhammad's ministry and this radio broadcast. Your contributions are appreciated. Send your donations to the MACA Fund. That's M-A-C-A, the MACA Fund. Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. That's the MACA Fund. Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. The Sensemaker presents Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. This new book is must-reading for everyone, which gives a concise and historical understanding of Al-Islam. Imam Muhammad's new book is filled with photos and graphics and words of wisdom that appeals to common sense. Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. Order your copy by sending a check or money order for $7.95 plus $1.50 shipping and handling to The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. That's The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. For more information and wholesale rates, call 312-243-7600. That's 312-243-7600. Get this dynamic new book from Imam W. Dean Muhammad, The Sense Maker.
A black man. So there are plenty of evidence that there were real Muslims in the history, in our history as Americans, our African Americans. And most of my talk is not dealing with those, when I say real Muslims, I mean those who were really in touch with the religion and understood the religion. Not that we weren't real Muslims. In our heart, and in our spirit, and in our intent, the followers, the great majority of the followers of Imam Elijah Muhammad were and are real Muslims. And not only that, I can say the same for the Moorish American group, the Moorish American Science Temple. Their members are Muslims in their heart, in their intent. They are Muslims. Though their language of their belief is quite different from the fundamental beliefs in the Quran, the universal book of all Muslims. And that's true, as you know, that's true of the following of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The language of religion in the following of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is quite different from the language of religion that we find in the Quran, its essential beliefs and practices. So again, I have to refer you to that language that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad used. He was putting us in the dress of Islam, in the dress of Islam. The vital organs, the true contents of Islam was yet to come. Behind those circumstances of the 30s and 40s came new circumstances with the 50s. With the 50s, we saw an appearance of Arab nationalism. Gamal Abdel Nasser, the strong man of Egypt. Egypt won, it got its independence, and he came into focus and into world news. It came into world news, into the focus of world news. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in the late 50s, went outside of the borders of the United States for the first time in his life. He made a trip to Pakistan. He made a trip to Mecca as a black Muslim leader. He was accepted in Mecca. He made a Umrah, what is called a Umrah. Umrah is the lesser pilgrimage. It's not the obligatory pilgrimage, it's the lesser one. And the one you do individually, not with all the Muslims from around the world. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad made that lesser pilgrimage, or visit to the Holy Land called Umrah. And from there he went to North Africa, and he was the guest of the Egyptian government. He met with President Nasser. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad returned, I'm speaking of different changing circumstances now. These are circumstances of the 50s. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad returned, he was a changed man. I've seen in my life the Honorable Elijah Muhammad change twice. Three times now. The first time was when he returned from prison in 1947, I believe, 46 or 47. He had served a 5-year sentence for refusing the draft. He did not only refuse to go up to the army, he refused even to carry a draft card. And many of his followers were old men elderly men they went to prison to, not because they were eligible, no, but because they refused even to carry a card, and you had to carry a card or go to jail. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad returned from prison, and what he began telling us was that we had to begin thinking of coming outside of the walls of the Temple of Islam and making our presence known in the public of the black people, of the African-American people. And he said the only way we can do this, we have to make a material showing. This was a change. Up until that time, there was no emphasis on materialism or on material investment. The emphasis were on obedience to Allah, and that we were a people that were special with Allah, and the end of the white world was here, was at hand, and we were going to be delivered by our people from overseas in the Holy Land. They would come over here and deliver us. We were even told that there was a spaceship built by Japan, built on the island of Japan by Muslims that would come down from the sky and give warnings. And there would be people assigned, agents at various places in the African American neighborhoods to tell them how to get out of America. And they would be directed to the ship and taken out of America, that America was going to be destroyed. Now this is no hearsay. This is real. This is real. During 1936, they were told even that far back that the end of the world was expected, and they should get rid of all of their radios, all of their belongings that they didn't need, and just be ready to leave at any time. That happened during the 1936, I'm told. The next big change that came for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was when he returned from that visit to Pakistan, Mecca, and Egypt. I believe he also visited Sudan. If he didn't, he met with Sudanese too. He met with Africans, the different parts of the African world. He returned and he said, I learned something very different from what we were told. He said, now we have to look at what we were told and understand its meaning. He said, what we were told is not meant to be taken literally. Much of what we were told, he said, is not meant to be taken literally. He said, I was over there and I know the condition of that part of the world. He said, they are in bad shape. That was Honorable Elijah Muhammad's statement. After visiting Pakistan, Mecca, Holy Mecca, Sacred Mecca, and Northern Africa, Egypt. He said, they are in bad shape. He said, we can't look to them. We have to do something here. The language, the thing that occurred in the history of Honorable Elijah Muhammad's following to indicate that change was his call for separate states in America. Before that time, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had never called for any separate states in America. He said America is going to be destroyed completely, and we were going to go back to our land, to our motherland, and live there in peace. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad began calling for separate states, and that's well documented in history. I'm sure many of you students, you know about that, if you are up on the history of what is called, quote, black Muslims in America. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, meeting President Nasser, was kind of inspired by that man. President Nasser was a man with great ambition. Though his Egypt was in the third world shape, or worse, industry had not yet started there, he had great dreams for Egypt. He was thinking of producing their own cars, and later there was really an effort. In fact, I think they did produce their first car, but their cars were never produced in numbers so that they could be sold or exported, or even sold to the Egyptian population. He was respected so much by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad because he was that kind of Muslim that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad could identify with. He was a militant Muslim, and he was a Muslim interested in industrial advancement. But Honorable Elijah Muhammad was very much impressed with him. And as a result, I think, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad began increasing the number of Arabs. I say Arabs very loosely now, because some of them were not strictly Arabs, but they were from that part of the world, Muslims from the Middle East or from the Far East. He began increasing the number of them that were among us. He departed somewhat from the Farad's teaching. Farad taught him not to allow any Muslim from overseas into our circle. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad kind of departed from that, and he hired a Jordanian by the name of a professor at that time. He's doctor now, Dr. Jamil Diab. And later he hired Professor Baghdadi, who was Iraqi, and he also hired others from that part of the world, or from the Eastern world, part of the world, who were Muslims. And that began another change. The students of Sister Clara Muhammad School, I am a student and graduate of the high school of Sister Clara, what is called Sister Clara Muhammad School now. At that time, those schools, elementary and high school, were called university, University of Islam. Now, don't think that's strange that we called elementary school and high school university. The history of some of our finest black institutions, our finest colleges, they were started by men who did not have college education. And they were called colleges and universities when they were headed by men who did not even have college education. But today that has changed. Today they have those people with the proper credentials. Now, I want to bring something else to your, attention, and I'm going to conclude this talk of change by saying Farad left many things with us that couldn't be substantiated. Claims that were unsubstantiated. When we got in contact with Arabia, with that part of the world, his claims could not be substantiated. And one of the claims he made was that the streets in Mecca were paved solidly with pure gold. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, I didn't find gold there. He said, it was hard to find pavement. They had dirt roads, I should say sand roads, during the late 50s. And when I made my first Hajj, first pilgrimage, it was in 1967.
The Sensemaker presents Al Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. This new book is must-reading for everyone, which gives a concise and historical understanding of Al-Islam. Imam Muhammad's new book is filled with photos and graphics and words of wisdom that appeals to common sense. Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. Order your copy by sending a check or money order for $7.95 plus $1.50 shipping and handling to The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. That's The Sensemaker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. For more information and wholesale rates, call 312-243-7600. That's 312-243-7600. Get this dynamic new book from Imam W. Dean Muhammad, The Sensemaker. Imam W. Dean Muhammad speaks. Join us again next week for Imam W. Dean Muhammad. Thank you for listening.
In Europe. For the first time ever now, the Jews were allowed to enter into Freemasonry. So, of course, they started their own Masonic lodge also. The reason why the Illuminati wanted to do this was because international banking had already started. And those in high finance, they wanted to be on their side to finance world revolution. So the Illuminati brought into it people like Mayor Angel Rothschild, who started the first international banking concern, if you want to get technical, in modern day, in the last 200 years. The order expanded very rapidly. And when this happens, there's usually dissension in the ranks. As a direct result, the right-hand man of Adam Weishaupt, a Mr. Krieg, and two of his other associates, tried to usurp some of Weishaupt's authority. And of course, they were relieved of their position. people at that time became very intensely aware of the activities of the Illuminati. Others of their organization left. In 1785, four leading members left. They began to talk and literally testified in a court of inquiry that was called by the Elector of Bavaria. They gave very startling evidence as to the intensity and the long-range plans of the Illuminati. Here's what they said. They planned to bring about, and I quote, a universal revolution that should deal the death blow to society. This revolution will be the work of the secret societies, and that is one of our great mysteries, end of quote. Does anyone belong to a secret society? What have you got to hide? Jesus Christ is the light of the world. There's nothing to hide there. So the danger of the Illuminati became very clear to the Bavarian government. They decided to put out legal documents and send it all over the continent. They were called and entitled the Original Writings of the Order and Sect of the Illuminati.
To the World Ministry of Imam W.D. Muhammad, the Muslim American spokesman for human salvation. And now, Imam W.D. Muhammad. The Sense Maker presents Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W.D. Muhammad. This new book is must-reading for everyone, which gives a concise and historical understanding of Al-Islam. Imam Muhammad's new book is filled with photos and graphics and words of wisdom that appeals to common sense. Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W.D. Muhammad. Order your copy by sending a check or money order for $7.95 plus $150 shipping and handling to The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. That's The Sense Maker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. For more information and wholesale rates, call 312-243-7600. That's 312-243-7600. Get this dynamic new book from Imam W.D. Muhammad, The Sense Maker. This is part two of a lecture by Imam W.D. Muhammad, entitled The History of the African-American Experience in Islam, recorded at the University of Arkansas, Little Rock.
Students of Sister Claire Muhammad School, I am a student and graduate of the high school of Sister Claire, what is called Sister Claire Muhammad School now. At that time, those schools, elementary and high school, were called university, University of Islam. Now, don't think that's strange that we called elementary school and high school university. The history of some of our finest black institutions, our finest colleges, they were started by men who did not have college education. And they were called colleges and universities when they were headed by men who did not even have college education. But today that has changed. Today they have those people with the proper credentials. Now, I want to bring something else to your, attention. And I'm going to conclude this talk of change by saying Farad left many things with us that couldn't be substantiated. Claims that were unsubstantiated when we got in contact with Arabia, with that part of the world, his claims could not be substantiated. And one of the claims he made was that the streets in Mecca were paved solidly with pure gold. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, I didn't find gold there. He said, it was hard to find pavement. They had dirt roads, I should say sand roads, during the late 50s, and when I made my first Hajj, first pilgrimage, it was in 1967, and the condition was still there. They had sand roads and very, very little paved roads or cement walkways in the city itself. So that is one of the claims that we couldn't substantiate. Now, I'm according to myself now. Why am I according to myself? Because I am a key figure or key person in what is happened to change Muslims from what we were to what we are now. And I'm not a key person because of my doings only. I'm a key person because of the doings of others before me. When they told me how I came to be called by my given name, I was given this name I have, I was given it at birth. A lot of people don't believe that. I've talked to African Americans, Christians, and they say, "What's your name?" I say, "My name is W.D. Muhammad." They say, "But what is your real name?" I said, "It is my real name." I say, "But when did you get that name?" I say, "I was born with it." They don't believe it. Yes, I was born with it. That was the name given to me at birth. When I was born in 1933, October 30, 1933, and don't remember that. I don't like to be remembered as being that old. Please forget that. I like to think of myself in my early 40s instead of the age I really am. Now, especially with the young wife I have here and the fine young children I have, and many people ask me, "Is that your granddaughter?" I said, "No, that's my child." You know, one of the kings of Mecca, he had a daughter approaching 80-some years. And he had a daughter. They had it in the paper this many years ago, that this king had a child, you know. So don't think that men burn out so early. Now, when they told me how I came by my given name, Wallace D. Muhammad, they were beginning to create a rebel in me, a rebel in me. When they said I would teach the Quran. Now my father was teaching mostly Bible, and you who are keeping up with Minister Farrakhan, and this is no knock, I'm not knocking Minister Farrakhan. If you are keeping up with him, you find that he teaches more the language of the society and the Bible than he does Quran. But when I was told that I was named after Farrakhan, that one of his names was Wallace D. Farrakhan, when I was told that I was named after him, they began to create a rebel in me. When they told me that I would teach the Quran, and this is what my father, Elijah Muhammad, told me. He said, "You won't teach like I'm teaching." He said, "You will teach the Quran." They were creating a rebel in me. When Farrakhan offered the Quran as the highest award in his problem book lessons. Now, some of these problem book lessons are still in existence, and you who have them, who follow some of Silas, I almost say Silent, but his name is Silas. You who follow Prophet Silas and the other black Muslim leaders, that look in your lesson books, look in those problem books, and you'll find Farrakhan addressing the student who studies the book and solve the problem, and saying to the students that for solving these problems correctly, the best reward, the highest reward, will be a holy Quran Sharif. Although there are other awards. There are rewards of money, real money. But he placed the Quran above money. He said the highest reward will be a holy Quran Sharif. Now, when he did that, he was creating a rebel in me. When Farrakhan included socialist language in his writings, problem book lessons writings, he uses the language of socialist, the communist world also. And he says that, and I'm quoting, "Socialist means to advocate a society of men, a group of men for one common cause, and equality means to be equal in everything," end quote. That's Farrakhan in his pamphlets that he left with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and with us, with the following. When he did that, he was creating a rebel in me. Why? Because I looked at what we were and I saw so many contradictions. We weren't a society of all equals. Some of us were above others. We weren't all equal. Some of us had markings of divinity, and some didn't. We thought of the Honorable Elijah Farrakhan himself as being divine, God incarnate, a God in the person, the same as Jesus Christ, a God in the body. We thought of Farrakhan in the same way that Farrakhan was God in the body. So we didn't have that equality that Farrakhan was suggesting. So he was creating a rebel in me. So this is the first time I've gone into these kind of touchy things. You're getting something that no other audience have gotten from me. Yeah, I haven't gone into these details to give you these touchy things. But this is real. And I plan when I go see Dr. C. Eric Lincoln, he invited me to Duke University, and I'm to speak there in March. When I go there, I'm going to give him much of what I'm giving here. That'll be the second time that I've given this. Now, I knew Farrakh was a God figure. How am I equal to him? He's God figure, he's God, and I'm a man. Well, there's no equality. And I knew the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was the messenger of God with absolute authority over all of us in the name of his teacher, Farrakh. So I didn't see that as any equality. And then I saw a lot of things happening in the Fruit of Islam, the military unit of the Nation of Islam, that didn't suggest to me that we were pursuing a real equality. So that made me rebel. I began to question the language and look for another answer. Now, know this, that while I was rebelling, the tendency to prove them right was stronger than the tendency in me to rebel. Now understand that. The tendency in me to prove Farrakh and to prove Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam right was stronger in me than the tendency to rebel. Understand that. Now how do I explain that? Well, I was the choice person among them. I was the only one who had been given the name of the God, Farrakh, the only one. And I was the only one who had been given the permission to do something that no other one was given permission to do. And that is study the Quran and prepare for a day when I would be leading by the light of the Quran and not by the light of what we had been given. Now, so that endeared me to Farrakh, that endeared me to Elijah Muhammad in a special way. I always loved my father with a great love, but that endeared me to him in a special way. That made me fear and reverence both of them. And when I was charged with deviating from the theology of the Nation of Islam, or the black theology, and my answer to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was this. I said, Daddy, Farrakh is your savior. I acknowledge that. But you are my savior. That's what I told my father. And what did I mean by that? Farrakh left after 3 years. I never saw Farrakh. He was present in Detroit when I was a baby and 11 months old in Chicago, but I never saw him. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had guided us and led us out of small confines where we were like a secret order practicing the secret teachings of Farrakh's pamphlets or documents. And he had led us out of that to want business, to get jobs. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad did that. Though the hint for that direction was in Farrakh's teaching, because he said, acquire mathematics, hire mathematics, learn engineering. He excited the intellect to learn things that would eventually bring us to have some material standing in the world. But it was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad who did the practical things, or made the practical steps to bring us to have some material reality in our lives. And it was also the Honorable Elijah Muhammad who had the wisdom to take all of Farrakh's secret documents out of circulation and ban them. He made it contraband that any follower would be seen with the original teachings of Farrakh in the form of those lessons or problem book teachings. He banned them so that he would be able to lead us without us questioning his guidance. If he hadn't done that, many of us would have been questioning his guidance at every turn, because the teachings of Farrakh in those early lessons were quite different from the direction that Honorable Elijah Muhammad was giving us in the late 50s, the 60s, and 70s.
We'll be right back after these brief announcements. Thank you for your financial support of Imam Muhammad's ministry and this radio broadcast. Your contributions are appreciated. Send your donations to the MACA Fund. That's M-A-C-A, the MACA Fund. Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. That's the MACA Fund. Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409.
When my father suggested to me that I could present him as the God figure, this was a few months before about eight or nine months before he passed. He was in good shape, didn't look like he was gonna die. He was sitting at his table on 48 and Woodlawn, where he conducted most of the national business. And he told me, he said, son, he said, you could do as I did. He said, I was told by our Savior that he was the Son of Man, God in the flesh. And there's evidence that he said that Farrakh said that. There's evidence in Farrakh's documents by Farrakh that Farrakh said that. I won't give that evidence for want of trying to save time now. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, and I became his apostle, or his messenger. He said, you could present me as the God figure, he said, and become the messenger. He was worried that after him, the following would disperse and go their separate ways, and there'd be many leaders, and everything would be lost because of us dividing up into different groups. So he was suggesting a way as a last resort. He wasn't suggesting this because he wanted to see this. No, he didn't want to see this. He was suggesting it as a last resort, that I could introduce him as the God figure and become the messenger, he said, and then you could hold the people. He looked at me and he said the same thing to me that he said to me when he offered me one of his secretaries at the table. And I said, Daddy, I'm sorry, but I'm not ready to marry again. He said the same thing when he offered me. He looked at me and he said, oh, but you won't do that. He said, I know you. And he's right, I couldn't do that. Because I hadn't been created to do that. I hadn't been created by their influence to introduce him as a God figure and to be the messenger of God. No, I couldn't do that. The Nation of Islam, I want you to know, was my mother. The Nation of Islam was my mother. In terms of a controlled environment for producing a certain thinking, a certain behavior, a certain hope or aspiration in me, that creation came from the womb I call the Nation of Islam, also known as the Temples of Islam in North America. It was my mother, Farad, and his messenger, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, germinated that womb we call the Nation of Islam. So my existence, what I am, what I represent, is owing to the influences from Farad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the strong following in that leadership under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the pioneers who supported their ideas. Many times as a young man, I would be approached by sisters and brothers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad following, and they would tell me, they say, son, remember that your father is expecting you to follow in his shoes one day. And that would affect me in a very serious way when they told me those things. So I'm not saying it's owing only to Farad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. No, there were elders in our Nation of Islam, or in the Temple of Islam, that would also support what they were trying to do in terms of influencing me to be motivated toward a certain goal or toward a certain end. I'm now going to talk about the forms, the essential forms that I didn't hope to talk this long. I hope I'm not hurting anything here. The birth of rebels produced essentially two forms. One, black nationalist independence. And again, I'm not knocking Farrakhan. I think it's a tribute to identify certain black leaders as black nationalists. But Farrakhan, to me, is the most popular and most effective leader of this form, of this type. Minister Louis Farrakhan. He is the product of the old Nation of Islam in the form of black nationalism. And he's a black nationalist independent. No other black nationalism can capture his mind. Believe me, it's impossible. Farrad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad produce minds that cannot be used by others, that cannot be adopted by others. When they produced a mind, it was theirs forever. Now, you say, well, what about you? That's true. I haven't finished yet. Hold on. Yes, so it produced two forms of leaders. Black nationalist independence. Now, the undesired conclusion for this form is that they remain unchanged, remain as the Temple of Islam leaders. That was not desired. Farrad didn't desire that. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't desire that. If they become black national independent, they wanted them to change to another stage, to another mind in that kind of black nationalism. And that was that they should believe in a kind of Sadducee, and this is a term from the Bible. There are two main groups in the Bible Sadducees and the believers in the faith as most people believe it, Judaism as most people believe it. The Sadducees in the history of Judaism, they didn't believe in a life after. They believed that death was the end. The Sadducees placed importance on material life. Though they believed that they were true followers of Moses, they placed importance on material life and they didn't preach a hereafter. So I'm saying that the kind of black nationalist religious group that they intended that would come into existence as one of these two forms was a black nationalism that would believe in God as a pantheistic God, a God that is all in all, a God that is material in reality and not spiritual in reality. That is the kind of God they wanted the black nationalist movement to have, if it came forward at all. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has a language that helps us understand what is the reason for all of the contradiction? What is the reason for this experiment in ideology? And the answer is this, that it was a guesswork or a gamble. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that when Farad was desired to be born as a baby that would come to America and save blacks, his father said, after having the first baby by his wife, it was a girl. When he learned it was a girl, he said, "Oops, we missed that time." So that kind of described the whole thing. It's a gamble. It's a hit and miss thing. And when Malcolm said, "By any means necessary," I think he was kind of reflecting or responding to that language in the Nation of Islam teaching. Oops, we missed that time. By any means necessary. I mean, it's up to any of you to come up with some desire. Farad himself said, "What means and methods will be used to awake the worst one, the most dead mentally?" He said, "All of you students get busy and help solve this problem." So that gives the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and everybody else in his following the freedom to apply their own mental ingenuity to come up with answers for how to save the black man in America. Yeah. By any means necessary was not out of line with the teaching of Islam. Right. Under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I thought I'd bring that in. Now, the second form that was produced was to be a form that would have Islam as the superior idea, the Quran as the superior book, but also would be a kind of pantheistic idea of God that put more importance on material reality than on spiritual reality. Now, I'm telling you something else that I have told very few audiences, and they were very restricted audiences. I have proof from individuals that came to me from the Indian and Pakistani community that they were a part of this secret plan to produce a certain form of leaders for Islam out of the black community. One came to me expressing his disappointment. He said, "This is not what we wanted for you." He said, "How can you betray Farad, who did so much for you?" He said, "How can you betray your father, who did so much for you?" He said, "This is not what we wanted for you." And he was very angry and he was almost shaking. That's how upset he was. Not only that one, but another one came too to me, charging me with taking this in the direction that they did not plan for it to go in. And I told them exactly as I'm telling you today, they created me, I did not create myself. So I would like to say to them, "You missed that time." So that concludes my talk, and I hope you appreciated me letting you in on a few of our God's secrets.
Anybody else have any questions?
Relate to the brother
Nasser.
Nasser.
Yes.
One family.
Yes. How I relate to him? Yes. I relate to him the same way I relate to. It's important for me that I relate to him first of all as one who represents a history that we share. And I relate to him, and for me, that's a very, very precious history. In spite of the contradictions, it's a very precious history. So I relate to him that way at first. I still regard him as a friend. I still love him very much. I have his personal home number. He has mine, phone number. He has mine also. Though we differ in many serious ways, there's also a strong bonding. I relate to him also in purpose. Garvey, Drew Ali, and most of the black African nationalists that I know about, we all share a common purpose, our common goal, our aim, and that is to better our people, to better the African-American people. And we are being listed now. That is the group that are in association with me. I don't like to speak of them as my following. We are the following of Muhammad the Prophet, the prayers and the peace be on him. Though I know we have to have leaders, that's a necessity, but I don't like to put importance on me as a leader for them. The importance is on Muhammad the Prophet as the leader for all of us. I identify with all of those African-American leaders as leaders who, like the civil rights leaders, like Dr. King and others, like Du Bois before him, like Frederick Douglass even before him, were all trying to get us to be motivated toward improvement of our life, even if it meant risking our life to challenge established authority and risk that life, that we had to improve the life, the condition of African American or black people. That's the aim that we all share. So we are brothers in that. Though I'm not to be classified as a black nationalist leader, I still have strong attachment to the purpose and aim of the black nationalist the ideology. Strong attachment to it. My belief is that Islam offers us the best black nationalism. It offers us the best black ethnicity. It tells us that all we have to do is build upon the excellence that we have inherited from Africa, from our plantation days, from our free life in the South and in the North. Build upon the excellence of family and group life. Build upon that excellence. Islam does not come to undermine or to take away anybody's excellent culture. It comes to complement that culture and insists upon us having a distinction as an ethnic group, a racial group, a cultural group. To me, the best answer is in Islam.
The Sensemaker presents Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. This new book is must-reading for everyone, which gives a concise and historical understanding of Al-Islam. Imam Muhammad's new book is filled with photos and graphics and words of wisdom that appeals to common sense. Al-Islam, Unity and Leadership by Imam W. Dean Muhammad. Order your copy by sending a check or money order for $7.95 plus $1.50 shipping and handling to The Sensemaker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. That's The Sensemaker, care of the Muslim Journal, 910 West Van Buren, Suite 100, Chicago, Illinois, 60607. For more information and wholesale rates, call 312-243-7600. That's 312-243-7600. Get this dynamic new book from Imam W. Dean Muhammad, The Sensemaker. Imam W. Dean Muhammad speaks. Join us again next week for Imam W. Dean Muhammad. Thank you for listening.